Okay, Simon, what are you wearing right now?
Nothing.
That's right. And what do people normally wear?
Clothes.
Exactly. So now mommy's going to teach you how to dress yourself. Clothes keep us warm, they look good, and if we go out without them, the neighbors will talk. So it's important to know how to get dressed. Here's how it's done. Underwear always comes first, name tag at the back, then pants, then shirt. Get the first button in the right hole, or you have to start all over. If you're wearing a tie, it goes over, round, round, through, and pull tight. Tuck your shirt into your pants and zip up your fly. Socks go in first, then shoes, right on right, left on left. With shoelaces, just take the ends, cross them over, switch the loops. The rabbit goes down the hole, pull tight, and you're left with bunny ears.
I love bunnies.
Good to know. Now remember, spots don't go with stripes, socks don't go with sandals, and if you've tucked in your shirt, wear a belt. Got it? Why are your pants on your head?
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But spending just 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier and could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. That's 2min2x.org. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
It's halftime at UD Arena. Our halftime program today is being brought to you by the Bob Ross Auto Group on Loop Road in Centerville. Now let's head back to the studios for halftime.
Last season, we had a chance to speak with the support staff, or I should say assistant coaches, with Tamika Williams-Jetter about her team. And there is a new addition this year, and I am excited about this. Tari Cummings Baker. Let me go ahead and give a brief summary. Last 4 years spent at Baylor, previously a head coach at Arkansas Fort Smith, assistant at Cincinnati, Houston, as well with 24 years of coaching experience. Did I cover
it? Awesome.
Tulsa. Yes, I had it written down, and my handwriting is so poor, it looked like Tucker, so I skipped over it because I didn't want to say you were at Tucker University.
No worries.
All right, so chief of staff. Sounds political, but we're not talking politics here, I can guarantee you that. What is the chief of staff role, and is this a role that you've been in at other places, and they called it something different?
This is new to me. Chief of staff is a new, it's something that's starting to happen within athletics in general in the last couple of years. So very new to me here, but kind of it has a little bit of everything, kind of mentorship for the coaching staff all over. I mean, I get to be involved in the day-to-day stuff on the court, in recruiting meetings. I don't do any recruiting off campus, but I have, when kids, we have unofficial visits and official visits and kids come on campus, I'm involved in that with the parents and the prospects as well. Handle a little bit of the NIL rev share space. Been familiar with it from Baylor, so a little bit of everything,
So when you, so first of all, and I know there's all sorts of NCAA rules. Trying to memorize the NCAA rule book has to be a disaster.
Always.
When you say an unofficial visit, what does that mean?
So it is a visit to where any kid at any age can come on campus as long as we're not in a dead period with NCAA. There's certain periods of the calendar that you can't have prospects come on campus. So if it's in the contact period or just evaluation period or whatever, we can have PSAs come on campus, watch a game, tour campus, tour our facilities, watch practice, and just kind of spend the day with us in that aspect. We can't take, they can't go off campus, we can't go anywhere, we can't pay for anything for them on that visit.
When you say, what's a PSA?
Prospective student athlete.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think of it as pressure sensitive adhesive. And I know that doesn't work out very well.
So they can, so it's just really, them having contact, us being able to have contact with them on campus and kind of them getting to see us in a more intimate setting.
Gotcha. So when you say, and whenever I think of NIL, I cringe because all I hear about is, and this is more football, it's like, oh, we're paying $1 million for a linebacker, which I think is just ridiculous. Now, are you dealing with the finances part where you negotiations and all that can get very complicated and law degree-ish?
Yeah, no. We let our lawyers deal. When it comes to the contracts and all the negotiations of that university contract, lawyers and stuff take care of that detail of it. But just kind of a general information, knowledge about it in some ways, and light talks on the financial part of it.
So I imagine you have a connection in the past with Tamika. She has connections with the world in this industry. So how did you wind up coming here? What appealed to you about doing this other than it's kind of a different type of a thing that you've done before?
You know, it's really funny. Tamika and I didn't, like, know each other. We know who each other were. Or we would talk to each other on the road when we were recruiting and being in the same gym. But as far as, like, saying, oh, yeah, Tamika's my friend, or, you know, that wasn't the case. But we had had enough interactions on the road. One day we were talking. We have a lot of mutual friends, too, between her husband, my husband, and some of our other colleagues. But I had mentioned one time that I was getting married, and my fiance at the time, he lived in Cincinnati, and I was still coaching at Baylor and everything, and she just kind of mentioned, like, hey, you know, are you going to move this way? And I was like, I don't know, you know, wasn't even in the cards right at that point. And then she was like, well, maybe, you know, if so, you know, and something happens with her. So time goes by, I get married, we hadn't talked. Colleen, that was on staff, you know, is pregnant, has twins, having twins, decides that, you know, that it's going to be too much, and she calls me, like, yo, dude, what are you going to do? And I was like, whoa. And so I got married in January, January 1st of last year, and so we were, you know, doing a long-distance thing, and I was going to stay at Baylor another year, and then kind of decided, like, oh, this long-distance is kind of tough, you know, your first, you know, 6 months of marriage. And so I made a decision to come, and I was going to take a couple years off, and Meek called me with this, and she was like, you know, chief of staff, and I was like, what is it? She's like, you don't have to go out recruiting. I was like, tell me more. So it was the right time. Right place. I mean, you just and everything kind of fell together, and you know, I'd heard nothing but great things about Tamika, and so and that was one of the things that was very important to me, leaving Baylor with my family and my people. You know, didn't want to go into another situation, you know, with people that just, you know, good people. So very blessed, very fortunate that you know, Meek presented this opportunity for me, and it all kind of worked out.
So when you were at Baylor, you did a lot of recruiting?
Yeah, I was over the 4 years, I was recruiting coordinator, associate coach. I was, so I did a lot of recruiting.
Well, that's, you know, you walk in and you say Baylor, and obviously the current coach isn't there anymore, but still, I mean, you've got a great history to talk from. That had to have helped.
Yeah, it did. And we had really good resources, but Nikki Collin, you know, she's a great coach. She was a great person. She was coming from the W at the time, so there's a lot of draw to that. So yeah, it was before things started shifting with NIL and everything, it was good.
I'm almost wondering now, something I thought of, and you're the great person to bounce this off.
We'll see.
With NIL now and all of that, does it lessen the need to go recruit off campus?
What
at all? Meaning, I mean, it's not so much. It seems like it's more of we'll match. It's more of a money thing than versus a fit, maybe where the university would stand. That's
well,
what I mean.
It's a mix of things. I mean, obviously for Meek and the staff, relationships are still, you know, the number one thing that's important, and so we have to build relationships with the, you know, with the high school coaches, with the prospects, and we don't want to just live in a transactional world in it. Now, obviously, we know that it is transactional. There is a transactional piece, but there's still the relationship piece that is huge. So, got a little bit of both. It's a balance of, you know, you got to play the game in that sense.
It's good to hear. Okay, so what do you work with a certain group during practice?
I do not.
Or what do? Do you just observe?
Yep.
And run in and say, now move your elbow?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I'm not a positional coach. I'm not, I have assistant coach title because I can't be on the floor. But, yeah, I'm just, you know, here. I have, you know, almost 25 years of experience. So being able to help wherever I can and see, you know, whether it's on the offensive side, the defensive side of things, whatever it is, you know, I'm here as a resource, and I'm very, you know, thankful that Meek and the staff has, you know, welcomed me in that sense and allowed me to, you know, have my voice and to say what I need to say or want to say and them, you know, listen.
So you're able to be on the bench and give your input during games?
Mm-hmm.
So here's something I've always found interesting as well. So sometimes during games, there'll be a timeout, and all the coaches will huddle. And they'll huddle for, like, most of the timeout, and the players will just be sitting down. Why does that happen? Or do you find that that has happened at where you've been at Baylor?
I mean, there's a lot of different reasons. I mean, players need time to, you know, gather themselves. Coaches, we see, you know, there's certain things that we're seeing on both sides of the floor. It could, you know, sometimes it's certain coaches are gathering while the other coaches are talking to the players in the huddle, and then it switches out. So just different dynamics. But there are times that where you have to come together as a staff and, you know, and be like, okay, this is happening. You know, this is what we see. And so you're, you know, game planning in that so that you're prepared when you go into the huddle to talk to your kids. Like, these are the adjustments that we're going to make. These are the things that we're seeing. Or these are the things that are good. And, you know, so.
What do you think? I mean, first of all, I don't know if there are any. I haven't seen any, but I haven't really gotten into the season as we're taping this on November the 5th. But there is one rule I would love to see the college game implement that the WNBA has, which is the reset timeout. You're familiar with the reset timeout?
I'm not really familiar.
It basically is you can call a timeout, but you know how at the end of the game all these timeouts can kind of bog it down? You can call a timeout. You can make a substitution. Like, you can move the ball to half court if you need to, but there's no way to huddle. And it's basically called a reset timeout.
It's kind of like,
as a coach, and I'm really curious, as a coach, you might say, I don't like that, but it does kind of help keep the game going in the W.
Well, I mean, I can see that. That's some. I guess it would be kind of like the substitution timeout.
Yeah,
you wanted to get
basically.
Yeah, keeps the game, so we have it, but not.
Not a big fan of it. Okay.
I'm indifferent to it, I guess.
I got you. You'd have to see how it would play out. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And
yeah, thank you.
That is Tari Cummings Baker, and we'll get back to courtside.
The halftime program was brought to you today by the Bob Ross Auto Group on Loop Road in Centerville. Now let's head back to the arena for the second half of today's contest.